It's like the world's most general horoscope.
You instinctively keep people at arm's length until you decide they are allowed over that magic line into your group of close friends. Well, I have a news flash. As long as you don't have severe ADHD or mental issues, everybody does that.
Yes.
I won't tell you who sent me that because he wants to keep it a secret that he is all knowledge. You said it.
It says in the from. I mean, it's right there.
I guessed it. Even better.
He is a fantastic palmist, palm reader. I mean, really fantastic. Hey, anybody who's listening, if you meet Brian Met someplace, have him read your palm.
Wow.
I have the feeling I get smacked with it. If you look real close, right?
Hey, this is intermation. Well, we're all here.
Ready?
There's only four of us. Count it down.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Oh, wrong countdown, sorry.
This is Michael Bloom from the APS Stamp Buddy Service Committee, welcoming you to Stamp Show here today.
Return to sender. Return to sender.
Welcome to Stamp Show Here Today, podcast number 28. I'm sitting here with Scott, Cash, and Jeff, and I'm your host, Jessica. You find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Today and on Twitter at Stamp Show HT. Tell your friends they can find us on iTunes, Podbay, and Stitcher. Let's talk about stamps. So this week we'll be talking about stamp news, Canada Beaver Stamp, hashtag stamp stories, hashtag Smithsonian on stamp collecting, and our expert topic of the week is omnibus issues.
And everybody remember, stamp collecting happens when we dream together.
Give that on a pillow somewhere?
It should be.
Oh, embroidered on a pillow. There you go, by your grandmother.
Yeah. Yep. They should make a whole, you know how they put the little words in the margins of the stamps? Post office, because stamp collecting happens when we dream together.
That sounds like a PRC issue.
Well, everybody now knows what to get Cash for the Christmas gift exchange.
There you go.
If you happen to draw his name.
Anybody who embroiders, I'll put it up on the wall, which nobody can see because we still don't have a camera for our podcast.
Eh.
Plus, I need to get a nail to put my second picture up.
Okay, so stamp news. The Canada Beaver Stamp is celebrating its anniversary this month.
Canada Beaver or Beaver?
Beaver.
They can have Beaver back. Oh, okay. We don't want him. It's kind of universal at this point. Nobody does.
I'm just curious.
So on April 23, the first stamp depicting a beaver designed by Sanford Fleming, the denomination of 3 pence, was released.
Yeah, that was before Justin Bieber.
Way before.
And worth more, too, I think.
Yeah. Although Sanford Fleming was one of the co-inventors of the tube sock.
As soon as you started to see, when you said although, Jessica went, oh.
Well, I can see how this podcast is going to go.
I smelled it coming.
Scott, you started it.
I know. I think we're all a little punchy getting ready for Westpac.
So it was designed to commemorate the flourish of the animal in Canada. They're really big on... Oh, that sounds wrong. Beavers over there.
Do you guys watch Phineas and Ferb at all?
Yes.
When he was delivering the moose to Canada for conference day or whatever it was.
I didn't see that.
Canada has some very interesting sort of, they don't care about stuff. Like their Independence Day really isn't independent from anything.
They just said, we're our own country, Noe.
Yeah, pretty much.
Has to be, Ray.
Nobody had to fight. Exactly.
What was it? Constitution? It's why the stamp was issued. We're talking about the first stamp of Canada. It was issued because Canada became Canada. I forget what it was called. Gosh, you know, we should have like a mini iPad or something here so that we can pull this stuff up.
Well, we all have smartphones. So we leave them outside so they don't interrupt the show.
Yeah, that is a good point.
Give me your credit card. I'll get anything you want.
Anyway, Canada is a country. It's not part of the United States like most people believe.
It's that big wasteland up above North Dakota, which is our wasteland.
And they have beavers.
Yes. Specifically, Castor canadensis. So.
Mm. Well, my favorite story is that Detroit is actually, the name of the city is Detroit, and it was a big beaver trading post. And it was called Detroit because it's French, it's not English. So, can we get any more off the subject than Canadian beaver stamps?
Well, it's red in various shades, printed on white laid paper using engraved process and perforate.
And let me guess, has a beaver on it?
Correct.
Just one.
Yeah. It's not a flock of them or anything like that.
Oh, that'd be great.
A flock of beavers.
Okay, in the sky behind the beaver, there appears a sun symbol with three dots, but some people suspect is a secret engraver's mark.
Ah.
Ooh.
Scott's catalog lists it as mitten of a hinge for $35,000. And
where is it? There we go.
In 2015.
Really? Their number one is that expensive?
In mint?
Mint never hinged.
I don't think they listed never hinged, but that's probably the mint price. What's a U.S. number one mint for?
It's a lot of money.
Yeah, not $35,000.
No.
No.
But then it doesn't have a beaver on it. I mean, if it had a beaver, it'd be worth more.
Ours just has some old white guy.
Yeah. Cool guy. Nice. Eh. Good stories about him.
Anyhow.
Keep reading facts. Let's see where this goes.
Yeah, keep reading. Let's see what happens. We're up to the part where it says measures 22.5 millimeters by 28 millimeters. Who cares? Oh, excuse me. Cash's corrections.
Well,
28.5 millimeters. Wouldn't want to cheat anybody who buys their Canada number ones by the acre.
Hey, you know there's some Canadian up there that cares, eh?
Yeah.
It just talks about other number ones in Canada further down.
I'd be more impressed if they had a Canada Bieber stamp.
Oh, God, they probably
I'm pretty sure at this point Canada doesn't want him back. So I don't think that's going to happen.
I guess number 1 and number 15 are the rarest of the Canada stamps. So that's probably why this cat value is so high.
Hmm.
Well, even you're showing a 15, though, only has a value of 525 mint.
In 2010.
Oh, it's 2010.
Yeah, I didn't
correct that. Number 15 doesn't have a beaver on it. Number 15 has a dude on it, right? Yeah. I'm not up on my Canadian history.
It's the stamp that has a hoser.
A hoser. I wonder if we keep talking like this, do I need to do a Cadges corrections apologizing to all the Canadians?
Well, he must apologize to all of Canada.
At this point, I'd like to apologize to all of our Canadian listeners, all three of you.
Well, we do have a worldwide audience.
All three of you.
Although the most outspoken ones are from Romania now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're in the mafia.
Yeah. The Romanian mafia or the Canadian mafia?
The Romanian mafia.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know either one of those countries had mafias.
Okay, we're getting...
Okay, so hashtag stamp stories. We found an excellent video entitled Stamp Collecting by the Smithsonian NPM on YouTube about the joys of stamp collecting presented by the Smithsonian National Postal Museum. The video shows all ranges of collectors from youth just getting started to top of collectors who are thoroughly hooked all the way up to Bill Gross and Donald Sundman talking about their joys of stamp collecting at their end of the spectrum.
Basically, people, too, who don't know, Bill Gross, very, very big advocate of stamp collecting, very rich also, so has a magnificent collection. Don Sundman, the head of Mystic, fantastic guy, really knowledgeable and really, I don't know, I want to say upstanding, but he's better than that. A great guy.
He's a nice guy.
He's more than nice.
Outstanding versus upstanding?
Upstanding, outstanding, and nice.
So is he technically, I would assume he has his own private collection, but when you talk about that big private trade between those two guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Was that out of company collateral? Did Mystic own the stamp that he traded, or was that his personal stamp?
Well, the way the corporate law is or corporate taxes are in the United States, I would be very surprised if Don Sudman had an actual collection that he called his own personal collection. I would bet that he probably holds all the assets in the Mystic Stamp Company, except for, you know, maybe he collects, you know, chickens on stamps or something like that, which, you know, he would have some, hey, it's a growing field of interest.
Cash, I'm going to hit you with my sock.
Correction, tube sock.
And there's Cash's phone.
And you left it in a box to amplify it.
Share the video with your friends using hashtag SSHT and hashtag Stamp Stories, and let us know what it is exactly that you love about stamps. You can search for the video or find a link in our show notes under YouTube.
Oh, you can't read that.
I can't read BW.
No, that's okay. A temporary link anyway. Yeah.
All you have to do is go to YouTube and search for the term stamp collecting, and it's going to be one of the top hits, and the author is Smithsonian NPM, all strung together.
Okay. So, updates. Cash, I don't believe any updates. What do you have to share with us today?
Yeah, no corrections this time, but we hit a milestone that I believe qualifies us for a bunch of stuff. This is our 28th episode, which means we have 27 in the can, which means we can send this out to some people for NPR midnight filler.
Midnight filler.
Oh yeah,
that'd be nice.
You can see us on channel 157,222 at 11:45 to 12 o'clock or something like that. And then the second thing is we're all like looking forward to tomorrow morning when we all hit the road and drive to Westpac, which is San Francisco Airport, Marriott or Radisson?
Marriott.
And so anybody who is listening to this, you missed it by a week. And if I did see you there, hi.
I look forward to seeing some good stuff. It's going to be the first one. So it's not at the actual airport. It's the hotel next to it.
Yeah, it's not on the runway because that would be a...
That would just be extreme stamp showing.
That's extreme. Yeah, extreme stamp collecting. Run out on the runway and hinge your stamps into an album. And then we get chased off by the TSA.
See, now that sounds like we're coming up with a fun activity.
Oh, yeah.
The stamp decathlon.
Yeah.
How fast can you do this? How fast can you throw an exhibit?
Oh, yeah. Put all the exhibits up right in the on the runway and let all the planes knock them all over like dominoes.
The one that gets hit first gets the gold.
The one that flies the farthest.
Oh.
So, anyway, we're going to see all our friends up there at... Westpac, and hopefully we'll do a little recording of people, get some more bumpers done, get some end ads. By the way, if anybody is listening to the ads at the end, please use those people. We're going to try to hit them up for money eventually.
Well, that's being direct.
Hey, we need sponsors.
Yeah.
So we can go to more stamp shows and see more people.
Hey, yep. We bought these little microphone screens that cost like $24.
Yep.
Okay, so our expert topic of the week was inspired by the Queen of England.
Wait a minute. We didn't have any Lister questions?
Yeah, Christopher from Alhambra had a stamp collection.
Yeah.
In a place that isn't in a swimming pool.
Well, a garage or an attic are probably not the ideal places to store them. Basement is probably not a good place.
Well, we can also add storage units that are bought by Dave Hester.
Not a good place to keep your stamps.
Yeah, those suckers were really moldy.
If it's hot and dry or cool and damp, those are bad places to store a stamp collection. Also, don't store your albums on their side. Make sure they're standing up. You don't want to stack anything on top and cause your stamps to be pressed into the paper.
And for everybody who plays World of Warcraft, kill the silverfish. They don't like stamps.
Yes, and you should you should take it out about 2, 3, 4 times a year, flip through the pages just to make sure that the silverfish aren't having a picnic.
Have a little Minecraft silverfish up on my...
Besides, it gets you a chance to enjoy my shelf there. Your collection.
Yeah.
My son, Sean, gave it to me.
And I have seen the remnants of silverfish in paper, too. They leave little tiny husks from when they molt. And there'll be little visible signs of their little bug bits and stuff. So...
And they're disgusting.
They are. They're really, creepy looking.
Oh, you look at a magnifying... You want to see them from a long way away. Because if you look at them up close, they're hairy little ugly suckers.
Yep. I'm getting the really look from Jessica.
Any other listener questions that have come in from sure that's Roger in Alhambra?
How can I plate that up for Jeff for dinner?
Silverfish surprise.
George in Montebello writes, is there any Justin Bieber stamps?
No, stop asking.
Actually, I'll bet you there is some Grenada or something like that probably put out a Justin Bieber stamp.
Probably
somewhere.
By now.
Yep.
We'll have to remember that so that we can write them and complain.
Jessica, what's our topic of the week?
There we go.
I thought our topic was Bieber stamps.
No. Oh. Well, no. It's just their anniversary.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so our expert topic of the week was inspired by the Queen of England, who celebrated her 89th birthday this year on April 21st.
And she sent us an email.
She has an email, actually.
Yeah, she sent us an email.
The royal email.
This should have been under listener questions. I know the Queen listens to us religiously.
Liz from London, England asked.
So she was saluted a lot. She got a 62-gun salute in total, which makes London a very loud place to live this time of year.
She got, multiples, like all day long. Like, I don't know how the people in London have eardrums. Mm. They were all over the place. Cannons from 100 years ago, big guns from today, all kinds of crap. They like blowing stuff up to celebrate their monarch birthdays, apparently.
Sounds like a good hobby to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind that at all.
So I don't know if you guys knew this or not, but technically she has two birthdays. April 21st is her real birthday, the day that she was appeared on planet Earth. But June 13th is her official birthday. This comes from a tradition of postponing royal birthdays during the cold winter months until warmer summer months to accommodate warmer celebrations, and so the events would be better attended.
You're joking.
No.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah. See, she's the queen. I don't know why she didn't just command people to show up. Screw it. Y'all get to come out when it's like 20 degrees outside.
Yeah, she just goes there and says, yeah, my birthday is next Wednesday and I'm 27 years old. And it's like, oh, you look very good for 27. Here's your walker.
See, if I had a choice when my second birthday would be, it'd be on leap year day.
So like Pirates of Penzance, you'd have to be a pirate until you're like 105 years old.
You'd be 16 when you were, 64?
Yeah.
Love it.
So February 29.
You may be asking what this has to do with stamps. Well, monarchs have appeared on stamps many times over. And a monarch was on the first stamp, the penny black in England. And our expert topic actually has to do with omnibus issues. And it's not a mode of transportation. So what is an omnibus issue?
Yeah, when I first heard it, I thought it was the city system mode of transportation that stops frequently and often curbside and picks people up and delivers them places.
That's the muni bus.
Well, it depends on what city you're in. And ours is actually called the omnibus.
That is... Omni
trans
all encompassing bus. What is bus? Bus is just bus.
What does bus have to do with
omni issue? I could see that omni whatever, but omnibus that is interesting. We have to ask some Latin American people.
Well, omni means Latin. All present, kind of like
all encompassing,
multiple. Yeah.
I don't know what Latin for bus is.
We need to ask some Latins.
Bus.
Bus. Autobus. So yeah, that's a strange name.
Wikipedia said that it's an issue of stamps by several countries with a common subject and which may share a uniform design. Omnibus issues have often been made by countries under common political control or groups of colonies due to a close cooperation required to produce the issue. Omnibus issues are to be distinguished from joint issues, which are usually meant to be in a smaller scope.
So my first question is, what's a joint issue?
420. Justin Bieber. Joint issues.
420 was yesterday.
Which, by the way, actually, you know that that's a wives' tale or something. 420 actually means juvenile disturbance. And this is true. It doesn't have anything to do with marijuana.
Police code 420.
Except that Justin Bieber would fall under a 420 if he was still under the age of 18.
And yeah, I don't know, a pretty big disturbance.
Yeah, I don't know how old he is, nor do I care.
Then all is as it should be.
But anyway, 420 is joint issues.
Isn't it also Hitler's birthday?
420?
Yeah, that's what I heard, April 20th.
Oh, interesting. He's what, a Capricorn or something?
Something like that. No, I've had a lot of psychology training, and I had to learn about gangs, and that's something that's celebrated frequently by white supremacist gangs. So.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Really weird off-topic side note.
What is it, Godwin's Law? If you talk long enough, eventually Hitler comes up. So, episode 28, we jumped the chasm there. We mentioned Hitler, I think, for the first time.
Second. We talked about watermarks on stamps at one point. We talked about his stamps,
yeah,
too.
You're right. You know, we should have there's another podcast
we talked
I listen
about
to.
Swastikas. We didn't actually mention Hitler.
Touche. Good point.
But anyway, back to
Omnibus.
And the joint issue.
For stamps specifically, what's a joint issue?
Well, an omnibus issue is a joint issue. A joint issue is like in 1988.
A joint issue is just a very small. It's small in scope. Usually it's 2, 3, 4 countries. An omnibus issue can be 10, 15, 20 countries.
122.
Or
for the Jubilee.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So yeah, it's a big issue.
They can be very large, yes. Mm-hmm. Joint issues typically small.
The joint issue of the dolphins. We had a block of 4 dolphins and sea otters and stuff like that.
Those are whales.
Whales.
With Russia.
No, there was a... I thought there were sea otters on it.
I think one of them is a sea otter, but that's fish.
Fish, water, aquatic guys. And we had... we printed one. Russia printed one. They both look exactly the same, except that one is written in Russian and the other one's written in English, and that is a joint issue.
My favorite's the U.S.-Russian joint issue with the space stamps.
Yeah, the...
Soyuz.
Soyuz, yep.
So I looked at
But I hate those stamps. They're too big to put on an envelope, and they're only 10 cents.
Oh, they look really cool.
Yeah, but you have to put 5 of them on to send a letter, and you need a big, huge envelope now to use them.
So?
So one of my complaints about postage, buying postage, discount postage. There it is.
Big stamps.
Big stamps. I want small stamps.
With big values.
With big values. Anyway, joint issues.
Well, that's about it on that. Well, I found the first omnibus issue was issued by Portugal in 1898 by Portugal and colonies to commemorate, let me see this right, Vasco da Gama's discovery of the sea route to India. So was that 100 years prior or something?
No, way more than that. Vasco da Gama was 1480s, 1490s.
So it would have been 400 years.
Yeah, probably like a 400-year thing.
Yeah, but United States children are so bad at history, they'd be like, wow, that's pretty recent.
Yeah, no, that's back there with that Swedish stamp from the 1500s with the American flag on it.
There you go. Yeah.
That same period of history.
Yep. Yeah, the Portuguese Vasco da Gama on the bus is actually it's a pretty cool stamp or issue because it's very early. You can still find them. It never hinged. Really nice looking. They did good artwork on them.
We'll have to look it up.
nice boats.
So what would it mean by Portugal and colonies? What was the other side of the omnibus issue besides Portugal?
All the little Portuguese colonies they have. Timor and...
Okay.
Azores. Macau.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I mean, there's...
a lot of them. A lot of Africa. Don't think there was anything, because Brazil was Brazil then.
Yeah, no, Brazil wasn't part of that.
Yeah. Anyway, it was a really nice little issue. But then you get into the big issues.
The first British issue I found was the Silver Jubilee issue in 1935.
That was the Silver Jubilee of King Edward VII. Edward VII? No, George V.
Next week we'll have Scott's corrections.
Nope, it was George V.
I think you're right, it was George V. Because the coronation was of Edward VII. Edward somebody.
Oh, the next issue of 1937.
God, I
get your British history straight.
I failed my British history class.
British modern history.
Yeah. Anyway, the Silver Jubilee has many, many... colonies.
Oh, by the way, the 37 coronation was George VI.
Oh. I could run over and grab a catalog and see if you're right or not. Anyway.
Yeah, too much work.
You have the British dependencies, British colonies, British commonwealths, other countries, and the coronation, I believe it is. I believe all the Silver Jubilees look the same.
Correct. Well, that's boring.
That is correct.
And the coronations, there were some countries that made different designs.
Like Canada.
And New Zealand and Australia. Or not Australia.
Newfoundland.
Newfoundland, yeah. And then you had the Peace and Victory one, which I know had all sorts of different designs.
Oh, yeah, 45 to 46. Some of these are familiar to us. Jessica has some of these. We have a big list in front of us that go all the way up to the late 90s. And Jessica has quite a vast collection, thanks to Mr. Jim Lear, of Charles and Diana Royal Wedding and Princess Di 21st Birthday series.
Why don't you read the list just so that everybody can see?
Nah.
Too long.
Okay, it's like a page of crap.
It's not a page.
Too boring.
Okay.
It goes on to the next page.
Well, Scott, don't you have a collection of these? Like a complete collection of one of these topics?
I have some of them.
I have a box of Princess Di.
I think I have a complete collection of the...
That's just disgusting. 35
Jubilee. I know I have the 37 coronation.
Buy it. It's on eBay.
Peace and Victory. And
get it out of my life.
Silver Wedding. Almost complete on Universal Postal Union.
Scott's not here. Scott doesn't have his microphone or his ears on, so he can't hear me talking.
Well, that's normal.
He's learned to tune you out.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, besides the UK, what other countries have done these omnibus issues? What's coming to mind? Like, well, I'm curious why I think this is a topic.
Spain, France, Portugal.
I think that the Portuguese one was they consider it an omnibus because it was a commemorative omnibus. Spain clearly had the earliest omnibus because they had every one of their colonies with exactly the same design. It's just that it had a different location printed either at the top or the bottom. You know, you had the king, and every colony had basically what looks like the exact same stamp. So I'm sure that the omnibus we're talking about here is commemorative omnibus. But so that's the first one. It's got, and I know it's way before 1898. It's 1840 or 1860s and 1870s. I mean, you just look at the stamps, they all look the same, and you just read what country they're from.
So then the 1898 be the first official one where they did it on purpose and called it as such?
No, I think that it's because it's a commemorative issue.
Okay. On that note, you guys have heard of the Intergovernmental Philatelic Corporation? I've never heard that name before.
Yeah, they're an agency that coordinates issuing stamps between different countries.
Huh.
And they approach a country and they say, will design and produce, print, and distribute their stamps for you for a fee or for a percentage of the sales.
Okay.
And that's kind of what they do. And then they become like a stamp agent. And then they market those stamps. Obviously, they ship some of them to the country, but then they turn around and then they market those stamps to stamp collectors and dealers in other countries as well.
That answers a lot of questions, actually, including I was curious how some of these tiny countries had the ability to print their own stamps. Since, well, they don't, then I think they would be working through this kind of company.
Right. And every once in a while, you'll get a country that disputes the authorization of an agent like that to print the stamps, or say they'll say, well, we didn't authorize it, and they get into a argument over, well, yes, you did authorize it. No, we didn't. And it's kind of hard to.
This is what started the whole thing with Scott's catalog of, you know, who, how, what stamps do they list? What stamps were put out purely to bilk the stamp collectors? You know, when Grenada puts out a $12 set of Elvis Presley stamps, they're not, you know, they're not so much doing it for their postal need. Their postal needs are met with their, you know, normal little stamps.
Yeah, but I think if they're available to be bought at a post office in the country and valid for use, whether anybody buys them or not, they should be listed.
Yeah, but then you have a... You have sort of a technical line there. So they come out there and they say, here's we printed 22 million Elvis Presley stamps. Here's 500. Go sell them at your post office. And all of a sudden, boom, you're legit. And it's like, you know, there is a line that obviously some countries cross. But I don't think that there is ever a way where you would be. And I think that it's an uphill battle for Scott Catalog. I don't think there's ever a way that you can perfectly define a stamp which is produced just for collectors versus a stamp that's used for postage.
It sounds like you're talking about there's a potential for created rarities then. For instance, I think Grenada just came out in the last year or two with frozen stamps. Really, those were not intended as postage. But you go to Grenada with those stamps and get them actually used through a Grenada post office, how many of those are going to be in existence?
Well, it's interesting because you will get the philatelic sales agencies of these little Caribbean countries, and they will use their commemorative stamps. And most of the time, that's the only time you ever see them used is the philatelic mail that comes from the people who are trying to sell them.
Well,
that's funny.
Probably because the vast majority of people in those tiny little island countries don't mail hardly any letters anyway.
Oh, there are countries, or excuse me, stamp issuing entities that have incredibly small populations that, you know, may come out with 150 stamp issues in a year, literally 150 stamp issues. You know, everything from the royal birth to Sea Life to Elvis and Marilyn Monroe to Barack Obama being president. And Liberia is famous. You know, we have the Prexy issue. If you want to get an updated Prexy issue, you can go to several countries that have virtually nothing to do with the United States and get them all the way up to Barack Obama.
Wow.
Well, that brings up an interesting topic. I guess there's some controversy surrounding omnibus issues, more specifically Disney stamps and omnibus issues.
I would think it's because they have it's a poor country, and Disney has absolutely nothing to do with the country.
Well, also, I kind of wonder if they paid Disney any rights.
That was my second question. You see all these cool stamps and... okay, well, did they pay for that? If not, especially now that I know that it's a corporation, wouldn't Disney have a better chance of going after a multinational corporation in like an international court system?
No, they sell
them at the...
If they didn't
produce licensing?
The park.
Well, really?
Disney World, that's where a lot of them come from.
Huh. So I guess they do have licensing then. They must have worked that out.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's... But then you get a lot of things that people... they're popular topics that don't have licensing involved with them. You know, space exploration and stuff. You know, my favorite, one of my favorite stamps is the Faces on Mars. And I don't think anybody paid for that. And that was a very controversial non-omnibus. I guess we should get back on the topic of omnibus. But yeah, there's Disney stamps from poor African countries that obviously they're doing it to make money, not to increase the literacy rate in the mail delivery system.
Probably very few people in those countries actually use the mail, and if you suggested it to them, they'd be like, why? I just walked 10 miles down the road and tell the guy what I need him to know.
So are there omnibus collectors out there?
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, the Silver Jubilee has a lot of varieties that are very widely collected and very expensive, and a lot of them are quite rare. There's a flagpole variety where, you know, there's slight duplication of the flagpoles. There's small little changes in the very fly specky sort of stuff, but these fly specks are just incredibly valuable.
Hmm. Sounds like some of our U.S. stamps fly specking.
What's the one with the crying princess?
One of the things, I don't understand about the varieties, like on the Jubilee issue where you have the plate varieties, most people don't even look for them on used stamps. They're only highly sought after on mint stamps. That although the Stanley Gibbons catalog gives them values a lot of times, and a lot of times they're quite expensive, but you never hear about anybody finding one, and you never see them in auctions, and you never see them for sale.
Well, you see them in auctions, but you see them overseas in auctions.
Not used ones.
Oh, no, not used ones. Yeah, they are. They're much.
And some of them are very pricey.
Where's Lloyd? Lloyd would fit perfectly into this. Why did he go home? He should have stayed here. We're talking about his area of expertise.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Flies?
Oh, that was Jessica.
So then, is there anything we should be looking for, and how would you find them too? Because could I go up to a dealer and say, let me see your omnibus stamps?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Really? Okay. I mean, considering we didn't learn about it until today, at least Jessica and I didn't. You know, it's something we've never looked for. So,
and at least for the British omnibus issues, the Stanley Gibbons catalog does give pretty good information on those fly spec plate varieties.
Okay, cool. So that's something you could learn about and specialize in if you wanted to.
Yes. Oh,
Mystic, you know, we were talking about Don Sundman earlier. Mystic makes albums for... I'm looking at this list, and, you know, they have the 80th birthday of the Queen Mother. They have Princess Di, Queen Elizabeth. I mean, they have books for these, albums for these. And it is a very widely and very popular collecting interest.
Huh. Yeah, Jessica has some of their Princess Di books.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely beautiful pages. They did a really good job.
Oh, they do a fantastic job. We traded him for a book.
Traded who?
Don Sundman. What did we give him? Shout out to Don. What did we trade? I forget what we traded. Something.
You actually got a trade out of Don Sundman. That's kind of cool.
Oh, no. He's a neat guy. He'll trade. He does all sorts of stuff.
Will he be at Westpex?
Probably not.
Oh.
He pretty much sticks with the Northeast.
Yeah.
So we'd have to go see him like at the New York show or something.
If you're lucky.
If you're lucky.
He's on the board of the PF. He's a really big promoter of the APS.
He's a big dude then.
He's a big dude, yeah.
Wow. So
in the hobby, not in stature.
Yeah, sorry, don't mean to insult you. You're I don't find you attractive, but you're an attractive guy.
So before we open the C3A, I just want to say to remember to God Save the Queen.
Gold save the queen.
I feel like we should play their national anthem or something.
I used to have to play that on bagpipes all the time.
Okay, drum roll, please.
I think that wasn't the drum roll button.
Okay, let's open up that CPU.
Okay, I feel lucky about this one. Don't put your fan finger on that button yet. This might be the winner.
I can see Scott searching for a different button this time. Yeah, what could I do this time? And he's picked one.
Look at this. If I start yelling and screaming, you know what button not to hit.
As you rip it open with tongs forcefully.
And it's a normal.
$12 of postage.
$12 in postage.
Okay, you can email us at stampshowhereday@gmail.com. Twitter, StampshowHT, Facebook, StampshowToday, and our website, www.StampshowHereToday.com, with your questions and comments. You can now leave your questions and comments on our Google Voice answering machine anytime, country code 1-949-873-4298. There's also a link to our Google Voice on our website so you can make the call from your computer. And on that note, keep collecting.
And remember, stamp collecting happens when we all dream together.
Oh, boy.
This is Wayne Youngblood with Regency Superior Auctions, and you're listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurfs, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today. Return to sender, address unknown.